back to it. So I would say the Africans and the American Negroes have turned out to be an extraordinarily gifted people. The great tragedy is that by not making us full-class citizens as yet in America, they may be losing, I don't know how much yet. And to come back, I would say that unquestionably, I am an American, born there. My father's slave there. Upon the backs of my people was developed the primary wealth of America. The primary wealth. You have to have accumulated wealth to start, you know, to build. You did it another way here in Australia. You had to build your accumulated wealth too. You just came and took it. You know what I mean? And that's what they did in most of the countries. That's what you Europeans did. You just took it. We got to catch up with you a little bit. So in America. So there's a lot of America that belongs to me yet. You understand? But just like a Scottish American is proud of being from Scotland, I'm proud for being African. Now, in our school books, they tried to tell me that all Africans were savages, till I got to London and found most of the Africans I knew and were going to Oxford and Cambridge and doing very well, and learned their culture. And even once, somebody had the temerity, after one had conquered the Chinese people and imposed upon them the opium trade and everything else, to suggest that they were a backward people, just the people who had been civilized so long over the rest of you folks didn't make any sense at all. So somewhere, it was wonderful to find about the colored peoples of the world that they were very advanced. So I would say today that I'm an American who is infinitely prouder to be of African descent, no question about it. No question about it. I'm an Afro-American, and I don't use the word American ever loosely again.
Now, this was the feeling that when you're in London about 1937, 38, you really had the world at your feet then. I mean, you're a tremendous success, you were recognized all over the world. And yet you went back to America. This was the feeling that took you back?
I felt I had to go back to my people. That's right. The going was tough. Today, I can go back. I just had my passport renewed. I could go back to pretty tough times now. But any time I could get a telegram next week that the Negro people had gathered somewhere in one of their conferences, as they could, and say, Paul, in the difficulties that are going on in America, would you come back and help us? I would take the plane as soon as I finished my engagements.
Hey, that's Paul Robeson talking about his relationship to America. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. You can listen to us live or download our show in any past show by Googling in skitrow.la and hit Qumran Report. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, in celebration of the birthday of Paul Robeson, which was April the 9th, 1898, in Princeton, New Jersey, we will have a conversation with Dwayne A. Perry, the director of the Roby Theater productions of Knock Me a Kiss, and Toyin Moses, and the production is currently running at the Los Angeles Theater Center, located at 514 South Spring Street, LA 90013. Dwayne and Toyin, welcome to the Qumran Report.
Thank you for having us.
Now, before we get into a discussion of Knock Me a Kiss, can you tell our listening audience a little about your background, how you got off into acting and directing? Let's start over with Dwayne.
I'm kind of blowing myself up. The first time I was on stage, I was 5 years old. My oldest brother was in a production of West Side Story in a summer theater. And I saw that, and I was hooked. And then the following year, he produced a show with some of his college friends and put myself and my other brothers in it as well. So that was my first time on stage. And then I, you know, did high school theater, and I majored in theater at Northwestern University, and was fortunate enough to work a little bit in Chicago, got my equity card, got my SAG card. And then it was time to come to L.A. If you're going to do it, if you're going to do television and film and, like, really try to make money, you got to come to Los Angeles. So that brought me out here. And here led me to Roby. And so that's where I am now.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Toyin?
I started in San Francisco. I grew up in San Francisco. And I started at the Young Performers Theater Company in San Francisco when I was about 10 years old. I believe. I started working in plays with the company and doing children's theater. Mm-hmm. And then continued it through high school and college. I went to Occidental College and studied there. And while I was there, I studied in London at the British American Drama Academy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, at this time, I would like to play a short clip by Karen Chappelle, and then we would come back and discuss the Rovi Theater Company.
The Roby Theater Company through my association on the Beverly Hills Hollywood NAACP Theater Committee, where we go and view shows that, and evaluate them and have an award show at some point in the year, usually in February. And in that capacity, we had come to the Roby Theater Company and had viewed a number of the plays that Roby had produced. And these are award-winning plays. And ultimately, Ben Guillory, one of the co-founders, and I collaborated on a theater festival with the NAACP in 2010. And one thing led to another, and the next thing I knew, I was on the board, and now I'm the chairman of the board.
Great job.
It's all Roby all the time. That's what I say.
Yeah. Hey, can you tell our listening audience about the founding and history of the Roby Theater Company?
The Roby Theater Company was founded by Ben Guillory and Danny Glover back in 1994. Ben and Danny were both, they're very good friends, and they both started in the theater, and they wanted to, it started out as a Reader's Theater Company, and they decided that a black theater company was what was needed in Los Angeles, and they wanted to start one, and they felt like the principles that were, that Paul Robeson represented was something that they wanted in their theater company. And so that's how it started.
Mm-hmm. And the name Roby.
And the name Roby was Paul Robeson's athletic nickname when he played college football at Rutgers. Mm-hmm. And he later became an All-American and later as a professional.
Yes.
And, yeah, so that's where Roby came from.
Now, let me ask you this, Karen. What is the meaning of Paul Robes to you?
Robeson to me represents someone that has a great amount of intelligence and resilience. And he was multi-talented in so many different areas, athletics, the law, a singer, an actor. He mastered several languages. And the thing about him was that he viewed his talents not as an end of themselves, but as a tool to help the black race. And that's what he devoted his life to. And that's what he means to me. And I think that's what we strive for in the Roby Theater Company, is to use the talents of the actors and the playwrights to tell stories that educate and entertain, what they call edutainment, for the community at large.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's... Karen Chappelle, she is the chairman of the board of directors for the Roby Theater Company. And Dwayne, I wanted to ask you, how did you get involved with the Roby Theater Company? How did you first come in contact with them?
A dear friend of mine, Harry Lennox, and another mentor and dear friend of mine, Chuck Smith, got together and decided to do a play called The Last Season. I believe it was in, I want to say 94, but that may not be correct. And I had done that play in Chicago with Chuck. And when they decided to do it out here, through Roby, they asked me to be in the cast. And so that was my first contact with Roby, because Ben Guillory was in the play as well. He played the coach of this baseball team. It was about the Negro Leagues and the transition from being in the Negro Leagues to trying to be in the regular baseball league.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my first contact with Roby.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Tony?
I joined Roby, or started working with Ben, I believe it was 2005, possibly 2004. I started as an assistant in the office. I just wanted to get my hands on anything theater, and it was the late James Avery told me to just do theater, find a theater home in Los Angeles and get in and do it. And through, and then my father knows Danny Glover, and he said, well, call up Ben. just call mm-hmm. Ben and just get in Roby. So that's how I landed at Roby. I started doing office assistant work with Ben, which was great. And I became the office manager, and as well as doing a couple shows with them. And then that's how that relationship developed.
Mm-hmm. Now, when did you first, how did you come to direct something for the Roby? How did that come about?
That's kind of an, well, it's an interesting story to me. It once again involves my dear friend, Mr. Harry Lennox. He had been selected to direct a play called Permanent Collection, which he had been in Chicago. It was actually Skokie. And Ben wanted to do it, so he had asked Harry to direct. Harry is a working actor, so he got cast in a pilot. And so the first week of rehearsal conflicted with his shoot schedule. So he said, Dwayne, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to direct this play for the first week while I'm shooting this TV pilot. So I was like, okay. I had never directed before, so I was a little nervous. But I said, I can do a week. So I go in, we start rehearsal, and then comes to find out that it's a two-hour pilot. So he won't be gone for a week. He'll be gone for 3 weeks. So the first 3 weeks of a four-week rehearsal process, I ended up having to direct. And he came in and took over during the tech week. And so that's how I got the script 2 days before the first rehearsal. So that was my trial by fire, I guess. But it all worked out very well.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your process when you're directing someone who is also an experienced actor and an experienced director like me in this production?
Well, they say a good director, there's three things every good director knows, or I can't think of the exact phrasing, but it's casting, casting, casting. Mm-hmm. So if you cast the correct people as a director, you're able to let them be free to do what they do best. And that is the case when directing someone like Ben, who's professional and who knows all the basics. You just kind of let them do what they do. And then, you know, rein them in when they get a little out of hand or when you're trying to shape a specific thing. But for the most part, when you're dealing with professionals, you just let them do what they do. That's why you hired them, you know. And I was very fortunate with this cast, Toy and Moses, included in this discussion as being very professional. It's very easy to just sit back and let them do what they do because they're that good.
Mm-hmm. And you first saw Knock Me a Kiss at the Black Theater Festival?
Yes, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And once again, my mentor and friend Chuck Smith had directed the original production in Chicago. At Victory Gardens Theater, and I believe it was in 2000, and it was at the festival. So I saw it, and I was like, this is perfect for Roby, number one. And then number two, I know the perfect actress for the lead, that being one Toy and Moses sitting to my right. And so I got a copy of the script, and I gave it to Ben, and then the rest is history.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you visualize many differences in what you saw and how you wanted to visualize the production?
Well, the one thing that I wanted to add to the play when I originally saw it was more music, some kind of way in the production. And I wanted to add more dancing as well. As we got into rehearsal, that became less of a desire, and I saw the play in a different way. So what we have is still, you know, a dream come true in terms of what the play is now and what I had originally envisioned. It turned out very well. I'm very pleased.
Mm-hmm. Now let me ask you this, because I know that you were performing in Camp Logan. You know, you were performing in Camp Logan at the same time that you were preparing and rehearsing for Knock Me a Kiss. What was that like? What was the challenge of doing something like that?
Well, the challenge with that was when was I going to sleep? Because I work nights. So, yeah, it was challenging in terms of when I was sleeping. But directing and acting are the things that I love. So mm-hmm. you find the energy for that. The thing I had difficulty finding energy for was my job. Going to rehearsal was a joy. So that was the easy part. Doing the play was a joy. Mm-hmm. So that was relatively easy. The real difficulty was I had to miss 4 days of rehearsal because of the play. And I would have loved to have those 4 days back. Mm-hmm. Just so the actors could have just that much more time to play and develop and grow with the piece. But mm-hmm. like I said, it's turned out in much better than I could have imagined.
Mm-hmm. So, Tonya, what was your approach to your role to creating the character of Yolande?
Before we actually officially started rehearsals, I knew the play was coming for about 2 months before the cast got together. I knew officially that the play was going to be produced. So that was a gift for me as an actor to be able to have that leeway time to do a lot of research. I read a lot on W.E.B. Du Bois. I tried to find a lot on Yolande. There isn't much on the internet, so I read a lot of the letters that they corresponded back and forth. I read The Souls of Black Folk, started reading his autobiography just to get a feeling of the time, what was going on in culturally and socially, because the time period plays such an important part on the story and on the characters. So that is where I started my process. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then building upon that, I was able to find my Yolande and share that with Ben and find the relationship between the father and daughter. And that's, I think, the core central part of the piece for her is how she relates to her father. Mm-hmm. So I started there.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is your process for learning lines? Do you have a particular process?
Learning lines. I will say this play is a beautiful beast of lines. And it's written in such a way that you really have to honor each word because it's so poetic, the writing is. And saying that, it's also very challenging because I don't like to paraphrase any writer, but there is absolutely very little room. I say one sentence about 5 or 6 different ways to each character. Mm-hmm. So I really mm-hmm. have to concentrate and know the meaning behind and find what the little word change means and how that affects the intention behind what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. In terms of learning lines, I personally learn by doing. So for me, rehearsal is really important. Mm-hmm. And I learn by understanding the character. I personally don't go home and just, cover up a sentence and try to learn it that way. Mm-hmm. For me, it really has to connect the meaning behind each line. And mm-hmm. and through rehearsal, it came. So, each rehearsal made a little bit more sense for me, mm-hmm. line-wise.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, because you've studied theater in London, do you find there's a difference in the approach to the acting in London and here in America? Where do you see some of the major differences and similarities?
I would say culturally, London, theater is London in England. It's just people are raised in the theater. They're raised seeing theater, raised with the classics, and they know the history behind the theater. I would probably say that is the one thing that I have found. I was very fortunate to go to London and experience all the different classes that I took there, which you can take the same classes here too, but mm-hmm. I would say it's more of a cultural issue, not issue, but more of a cultural mm-hmm. experience with theater there than here.
Mm-hmm. And then, Dwayne, what is your process for learning lines?
I would have to agree with Miss Moses. I prefer to learn them during the rehearsal process, during mm-hmm. rehearsal. And I try to direct in such a way, I don't know if I was completely successful, that you can learn the lines in rehearsal. Mm-hmm. Because it's repetition. You just got to, the more you do it, the more they come. And like Ms. Moses said, you have to know what you're saying. If you know what you're saying, you know where you are when you're saying it, then they tend to come a lot faster. At some point you do have to sit at home and you got to get the script out and you got to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I try to just learn it during rehearsal.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are your thoughts on Paul Robeson? And I want to talk about that a little bit more about how much did you know a lot about Paul Robeson before you came out here and got involved with the Robey Theater Company?
I knew very little, actually. Mm-hmm. I knew that Robeson was an actor. I knew that that he had done Othello, but I didn't know to the breadth of his work and his influence on so many different things,
mm-hmm.
Culturally. And being a part of the Robey Theater Company has, you know, shed light on all that, because Ben is very knowledgeable about Paul. He did a one-person show about Paul for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been educated through the Robey Theater Company.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you see this piece, Knock Me a Kiss, as an ensemble piece?
Oh, most definitely. I mean, the play has its lead. Miss Moses, but the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, I guess. So yes, each person in this particular production could be a lead in another show, and that, for me, that makes the difference between a good production and a great production.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're on the verge of having a great production, because everybody is a lead performer, and they form a very solid and really great ensemble.
Mm-hmm. So this is, you would say the Knock Me a Kiss is Yolande's story.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Because traditionally, it's the person who starts one place and ends someplace else. And so you follow that person's arc or that person's journey. And the person who goes on the biggest journey in this particular play is Yolande.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely her play.
Mm-hmm. Her character arc and mm-hmm. all of that. Can you talk about Yolande for a while? Any surprises?
Well, I would say with having the story be about her, yet the most famous and well-known person in the story is W.E.B. Du Bois. So it's interesting to take a step back and try to peer into what his family life was like and the people who were affected by all of the work that he did and the sacrifices that were made that aren't necessarily heard about in the history books. So it's nice that Yolande gets a voice and the mother gets a voice, because you don't hear about those at all.
Mm-hmm.
And for every person out there, there was somebody behind them that allowed them to have the freedom, the time, the encouragement, the foundation to do what they did. Yolande is a very beautiful, rich character to explore.
Yes.
There is, honestly, any given night is a left turn that could have been a right, that could have been an up, that could have been a down. She is very complex, as one should be, and as we all are. And W.E.B. Du Bois, just to experience what it could have been like to be under his roof. I mean, this play is fictional, but it's based on factual events. So what we are exploring, we don't know what part of it was reality, but we're making it our own reality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the underlining gay theme that's there?
Well, in a lot of the readings I did of the time of the Harlem Renaissance, the gay culture was vibrant. It was alive, especially in Harlem. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's talked about, but it's not, I don't know how much it's really explored or through different pieces. It's interesting because the topic is something that we are dealing with right now. You know, this is, it's still a I did another piece. It was the DL Chronicles, a series, and it was men on the down low. And mm-hmm. so it also explores these certain issues. But it was the gay culture was vibrant during the Harlem Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting piece to explore, and it doesn't really get into the politics of it, given the time period. So mm-hmm. that's actually interesting mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because there was two other famous books called Infant of the Springs by Wallace Thurman that dealt with the Harold Jackman character and Carl Van Vechten in a book called Nigger Heaven is what he called it, dealt with that particular character in that book. But let me ask you something else I want to ask you what do you think of, can you give me some of your thoughts on some of the other characters in the play? Like County Cullen, one of my favorite poets. I thought mm-hmm. he was a genius.
Mm-hmm.
And what are your thoughts on County Cullen in the play?
In the play, interesting question. I think all the characters are very well written. I think it allows each actor an opportunity to show a full human being with the ranges that would take to be a full human being. The character of County has a lot to deal with. He has the pressures of what W.E.B. Du Bois is putting on him as saying that he's this image or this representation of a whole race. he's got to join him in this grand struggle. And yet, he has his own personal life that he has to try to lead.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a heavy burden to put a place upon anyone. And then you have Jimmy Lunsford, who just wants to be in love. You know, he wants to love his music. He wants to love doing his music. And he wants to have a woman to share mm-hmm. that with him and to love her. But, of course, nothing is ever that simple.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a backstory that changes things. So, and then there's Lenora, the best friend of Yolande, who is probably like the voice of reason, I guess you would kind of say, in the play to help Yolande through her struggles with dealing with love. Because mm-hmm. for me, the play is more about love than whether it's a gay play or not a gay play. It's about finding love and how you deal with all the difficulties that come with mm-hmm. trying to love someone.
Mm-hmm. And how about the Nina's character? I thought that was a real emotional aspect of the
yes,
play.
Yes, mm-hmm. the wife of W.E.B. Du Bois, mm-hmm. Which has its own burden to be married to someone that is so high profile and who feels that they have so much to do, then that leaves little time for her. And mm-hmm. like her daughter wanting to have someone to love, I'm sure that there's a part in Nina that just wanted to be loved.
Mm-hmm. You know?
So that's why it's a love story to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll tell you what. Let's take a little short break for our community calendar, and then we'll come back with our special guest, Duane A. Perry, Tanya Moses, and we're going to talk about the possibilities of a national African-American black theater company.
This is the community calendar for the month of April. The Roby Theater Company, in celebration of 20 years of excellence in black theater, presents a stage play, Knock Me a Kiss, written by Charles Smith and directed by Duane Perry. The play is dealing with the Harlem Renaissance, Dr. Du Bois, Cullens, Lunsford, The Talented Tenth, and The Wedding of the Century. Performances are April 5th through May the 4th, Thursday, Friday, and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3 p.m. The location is the Los Angeles Theater Center, 514 South Spring Street, Los Angeles, 914. For more information or for ticket information, contact 866-811-4000. 4111 or visit robytheatercompany.org or thelatc.org. Tuesday, April the 25th at 7 p.m., Drama Stage Qumran present the monthly Nasana Zone open mic with spoken word and live music. Sign up as of 6 p.m. and you get 5 minutes on the mic. Our featured musical guests will be Willis and Shantae. This is a free event and it's free parking. Also, light refreshments will be served. The location is the Vortex, 2341 East Olympic Boulevard, Los Angeles, 921. This is near the corner of Santa Fe and Olympic. For more information, contact www.dramastagequmran.org or dramastage1@yahoo.com or 213-479-1764. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com, attention Earlene Anthony. And the call-in number for the show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Earlene Anthony. Now, at this time, I'd like to play another clip by Karen Chappelle, and then we will come back and talk about Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois and Teofis Lewis' vision for a national African-American Black theater company.
How can we make community theater more affordable to the community?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, I think that community theater is kind of affordable to the community, as long as they know about it. I think that's the biggest thing, because the tickets are $20. And when you think about $20, people spend $20 on their cell phone bills, on, you know, just anything without even thinking about it. All kinds of discounts are available for our senior citizens, for our students, different day discounts. I don't think it's so much the price of the ticket. I think it's the information process, getting the information about the plays. That's what is necessary.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting that you mentioned a little earlier about for us and by us, because during the time of the Harlem Renaissance period, Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois and the Teofis Lewis, they advocated for the creation of a national African-American, you know, black theater company, and they said that it should have four components. It should be about us, by us, for us, and near us. Now, what are your thoughts about the need for a national African-American theater company?
I love it. Those are my thoughts. I would like to be involved. I would like to assist anyone in the creation of this project. You know, the Negro Theater Ensemble is still very strong and very much alive in New York. I mean, I think that there is a National Black Theater Association, but it's different than a theater company of actors, so to speak, that would tour around. I think it would be amazing, and I think that there's a need for it, and I think there's an interest in it among the actors. Listen, I see the actors at Roby Theater Company. These guys, to use an expression that was in one of the Roby shows that said, "You've got the go." These actors, they've got the go. They like the theater. They have talent, and they want to be involved. I think it's a real possibility, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. And it's needed because Dr. Du Bois and Theo Lewis, they was talking about this during the 20th, and here it's almost 100 years later, and we still don't have a full-scale national African-American theater company.
Well, what can I say, Ishmael? Time flies. I mean, you can't believe it's been 100 years.
Yes. Now, also, let me ask you this. What are some of the upcoming projects that the Roby have over there?
Well, you know what? Ben is just taking kind of a hiatus this year to try and get ready for his big 20th anniversary. I know that he is working on I'm doing something very special for the 20th anniversary, and it will be the it will be a world premiere play, but I don't think I'm at liberty to say what it is, but okay. Let me say this, it's going to be very exciting, and it's going to be very historical and relevant.
Okay, that's Karen Chappelle talking about the National Theater Company. And a little about Theophilus Lewis. He was born in 1891. He passed in 1974. He was an African-American drama critic, a writer, a magazine editor during the Harlem Renaissance, whose contribution primarily appeared in the Messenger magazine, which was a socialist African-American magazine founded by A. Philip Randolph and Chandler Owens. Lewis had a deep-seated belief that theater was an essential vehicle through which society could affect social change and cultural development. He also pushed for more demanding and positive roles for the black actor. His fundamental theme that the primary need of blacks in establishing their own cultural independence was for a national black theater grounded in the works of black playwrights. That was Theophilus Lewis. So let's talk about that for a while, because both Dr. Du Bois and Theophilus Lewis had a vision for a national African-American theater company. And what are your thoughts and your thoughts on how that could be achieved?
Wow. that's a very lofty dream. I would say what would need to happen first before we go nationally is to establish theater companies like the Roby Theater Company and get them on a higher level, to get them to the place where they're the equivalent of a Mark Taper Forum or the equivalent to a Goodman Theater in Chicago, where they have endowments of, you know, tens of millions of dollars. So that we can have equity actors who can make a living wage while they tell these stories that need to be told, so that playwrights can be paid the money they need to live and create. I think it's a lofty and a great idea to have a national black theater. However, that would take government funding and so on and so forth. I think if we start at home, if we start with our own, and especially here in Los Angeles, there are so many people with money who could make a contribution to the Roby Theater Company of $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 every year for the next 10 years. If we had 100 people do that, Roby could do some amazing things. Then we could do original pieces like Melvin Ishmael Johnson's Emperor's Last Performance, and actors can make a living wage. It's very difficult to rehearse for free, relatively, and ask actors to work for free, relatively. Actors are the only people who are asked to work for free, and most people in the theater, the lighting designer, the set designer, the costumer, everybody gets paid. The director, well, not in this particular case, but everyone gets paid. So a national black theater company would be great. But I think they're like we were talking earlier, you have to crawl before you can walk. I think the crawling would be getting these community-based theaters to get to a higher level, so that once that is established, then it's much easier to do the next one.
Tanya, what are your thoughts?
Wow, I know it's not too attractive to say ditto, but I ditto all of that. I really do. It's interesting. It's what Dwayne is saying, to piggyback on it. The key to success in so many areas is a strong foundation, and you have to really respect the steps that it takes to get to where you want, but you also need to know where you're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, all around the country, there are a lot of wonderful communities of black theater, especially in Winston-Salem, where my mom is from. And, you know, there's the National Black Theater Festival there. And you see the community of black theater that comes together every other year for the art and for the stories. The stories are there. The people are there. And you know, we just really need to make sure that the appropriate steps are taken to get there so that we can be a strong foundation of a national black theater.
Mm-hmm. Now, there have been some studies about it, because, you know, we did have a national theater company called the Federal Theater Project, in which they had the Negro theater, Hispanic theater, Yiddish, et cetera, like that. And what I found is that the glue that seemed to held these theater companies together that we don't have now is because of segregation during that particular time. It forced the concept of group economics for all of these communities. They had to practice group economics. And the theater was the center point of it. You had the black church. You had the black sport teams. See, but the theater is the one that defined the culture for it. And it was strong for about 3 or 4 years. And when I look at it, I think that's one of the key to developing a national theater company. Because you got these strong cities like Detroit with the huge African-American population. And they've been trying to get everything to get Detroit and Cleveland, cities like that, back on their feet. But I like out here in Los Angeles, I think it's the African-American is the only group that don't practice group economics. I don't think it can be achieved without coming back to that whole concept of developing some defined community. And the theater company, the theater have to be the center point of that. I don't think they will ever develop group economics again unless they develop a national theater company. You know, I feel they got to create jobs for these, like they had it in the 30s. But let me also ask this while we're talking about that for a little. What advice would you give to some of these little youngsters that's trying to break into the business? Because people come from all over the United States coming out here, or Hollywood, as they call it. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give individuals coming out here?
Certainly.
The actors first.
Wow. I think I've probably been out here too long to answer that question. what would I have said 10 years ago? I guess it has to be, your soul has to ache to do this. It has to be the only thing that allows you to breathe. Because if there's something else that draws you or that you love, you probably should do that, because this is a hard road. It's challenging, because there are a lot of sacrifices that have to be made. But the benefit or the joy that you get because of those sacrifices are just as large. So I would say that to anyone wanting to pursue it, you have to love it. It has to be your life's breath.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Tonya? What advice would you, especially young African-American female that's trying to break out of the acting competitive business out here?
It is. It's very competitive. And then you put a minority into the mixing pot on top of it, and it's that much more competitive. And with saying that, I would say that it is very, very important to grow, to be a part of a community, especially within the black community of the entertainment world. It is so small, and to really know who your community members are and be involved and be a part of that community. So as competitive as it is, you can't be negatively competitive. That mm-hmm. You have to be really supportive of your fellow member, because mm-hmm. we're in it for the long haul and we're in it together. And I've known some acting friends. I see them at auditions for the last 10 years. And you have to just genuinely be happy for the successes of others and know that your success will come.
Okay.
And I would say work breeds work. That was the advice I was given by the late James Avery. And it's been the best advice I have. Just know what you are doing and know that something will come from doing it, but you can't sit around waiting.
Okay. I think we got Ben on the line. Ben, how you doing?
Hey, Mel. How you feeling?
Oh, just fine.
I'm sorry.
Oh, hey, that's okay. We're sitting here with Dwayne and Tonya in the studio with us.
Hey, Ben.
Hello, Ben.
Hey, Ben, can you talk about what are your thoughts on playing Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois in this play, Knock Me a Kiss?
You know, I had a... It's the second time I've worked on a character that was very, very, very well known by the public. And there are choices that I'm getting a feedback. I don't know if you're getting that, but I am. The choices that I'm led to make by the text, because it's really a very short period in his very long life. Dr. Du Bois is 61 years old when the play is. So he's lived quite a life already and done an awful lot, given who he was in the first place, the scholar, the strategist for the struggle, one of the first to scientifically study, quote, the Negro, unquote, the Philadelphia study. The Philadelphia Negro is what I'm speaking about, and so many others. So the work, you know, that's research to track him, to see how he landed, where he landed, was long and extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and Dwayne and I had this talk a little bit, and Dwayne mentioned it more than once, that we are doing this play, and it just actually alerted me that I cannot really attempt to include in the play all that he had done. We have to play the moment, what is happening then and there between he, the family, and the other characters in the play. At the same time, there's a real responsibility because of who this man was. We're talking about Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, who lived 95 years and was truly, this is one of the men that founded the Niagara Movement, which led to the NAACP, and again, was the scholar that he was, that most referenced having to do with sociology before it was even a science.
Let me ask you this, Ben. We talked about it a little earlier because I know that you are a great director. You're a great actor. Do you consider yourself an actor first or director first? Which one?
I'm an actor this time around. I am only an actor. Yes. You know, I can really say that I found myself during the rehearsal process, of course, putting on that kind of hat of that directorial hat a couple of times. And then I looked over at Dwayne and I said, I need to let this alone, because we're in good hands. This isn't actually a moment that I don't have to think about that. I can truly just be an actor, which is a real luxury, and not have to wear two and three hats. Because, again, Dwayne said it during one of the rehearsals. He said, you should trust me. He was talking to the entire ensemble at the time. And it just really, I knew it, saying it out loud really brought it home. Especially when somebody's capable, you know, you trust him.
Yes. Now, let me also ask you this, because I know you're in your acting class right now. You deal with a lot of actors. A lot of actors come from all over the world heading out here to Southern California with Hollywood dreams. What advice would you give little young actors trying to break into the business?
Expect not much. Expect nothing, really. They have to bring I'm out in the street, so you might hear some background noises. But they have to bring a passion and appetite for this. Because there's so many things that can warp one's concentration for the art form here or anywhere. So one has to really have a solid foundation of why they do this and why they want to endure all the things that one will eventually, invariably have to endure as a performing artist, trying to make a living, trying to do a kind of work that they believe in. There's a lot of baggage that comes along with that.
Okay.
So having a foundation, a solid foundation of why one is doing that, that needs to be clear.
All right. Let me ask you the final question, and I want you to, any question that you want to ask Dwayne as your director and Toya as your co-actor, what question would you want to ask them?
Ask Dwayne?
Yeah, Dwayne or Toya, what question you want to ask?
Well, you know, what question? I don't know. I think I've asked them all the questions. And the questions that I wanted to ask them, I think I knew the answer pretty much. Because, you know, Dwayne, Toya, Ashley, Rosie, Keir, Jason, four out of those six, we've worked together before closely, and we have a real ensemble feel because we've done 4 or 5 years worth of work together, and I've had endless conversations and thoughts that we're on the same page about this. And it, a lot of things get unsaid, Mel. A lot of things just go by, and we just understand it. Whenever I get ready to ask Dwayne a question in the rehearsal process, I stop and say, do I know the answer to that question? Am I just saying something to say something here, or do I really need an answer? And most of the time, at the risk of sounding like I might think I know everything, usually, you know, those answers are pretty obvious.
Okay.
And the answer to most of it is just do the work.
Okay, Ben, hey, thank you very much for calling in. We're winding down. Looking forward to seeing the rest of the production, rest of the performances. Thank you very much.
See everybody at the end of the week.
Right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye. Right. It's
Ben Guillory, the producing artistic director of the Rovey Theater Company. Before we wind down, the question I always wanted to ask is, what do ouchie mean, you know, in the production? I wanted to ask that so bad, and I always keep forgetting.
Yeah, this well, is, it's a question that we've asked, and it's gone unanswered. So I'm assuming that it's just a nickname. That was given to her.
Okay. Now, because of the Downtown Art Walk, Knock Me a Kiss will continue this Friday, April the 11th and 12th at 8 o'clock, and Sunday matinees at 3 at the Los Angeles Theater Center, located at 514 South Spring Street, LA 90013. For more information, call 213-489-7402. And I'm going to go quickly around and ask Dwayne and Toya to give us a little short closing comments. We've probably got about 30 seconds apiece.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you, Melvin, for having us and for bringing us down to talk about this wonderful play, Knock Me a Kiss, starring the beautiful and talented Toya Moses.
Well, thank you, Dwayne. I would also like to thank you for having us here. This is a wonderful treat, and it's been a wonderful treat to explore the world of the Harlem Renaissance and this amazing story that is an important part of our history. So please come out and check it out. Thanks.
Check it out. Okay. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report. And from your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnson, my co-host, Earlene Anthony, Bobby Buck over there doing some networking. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with Paul Robeson singing Old Man River.
There's an old man called Mississippi. that's the old man that I'd like to be. What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free? Strain, body all aching and wrecked with pain.